The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. Shaka Hislop, Sebastian Salazar here in studio with you on the eve of the Champions League final. Shaka, it's been such a crazy week. The managerial merry-go-round in full effect. Feels like the game has kind of slipped under the radar just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Just but it is a Champions League final, so all focus is on that now.
Full preview coming up, including a live hit from Porto. Get to that in just a second. Let's paint the picture first. Manchester City, your Premier League champions, obviously installed a significant favorites over Chelsea on Saturday. Quite the crew to discuss this match. We've got Frank Leboeuf, Craig Burley, Steve Nichol, and Martin Einstein joining us from Porto. Martin, I'll start with you. Give us a sense of the atmosphere here ahead of this final, which we know this year will have fans, unlike last year.
Yeah, that's the turning point. That's the difference. The passion was missing, and thanks God he's back. I mean, having the fans, I came from Gdansk, from Poland, the Europa League final, and having the fans there in the stands, in the streets, singing with their scarves, their T-shirts, putting color, adding the real football, which is the identity, the DNA, what football means for the people, is something that we were missing so much through this year, and thanks God he's back. I think it's going to be an amazing atmosphere at the stadium. Most of the fans, that 6,000 fans from Chelsea and 6,000 fans from City, are coming the same day in charters. They will head to the stadium, and we're going to have an amazing atmosphere. A stadium of 50,000 people, fill up with approximately 16,000 people chanting, singing, and backing up their team. It's amazing.
Martin, it's the day before the match, so we get a couple of training sessions inside the stadium. We also get to hear from both managers and press conferences. Anything interesting or important come from any of that today?
Yeah, there's a common ground and a point that both share. I think that Manchester City and Chelsea, they have coaches that work in details. They work very deep into the players, how they prepare the game. They are signature teams. And you could see Thomas Tuchel very relaxed, trying to make the game and the final feel as a normal day at the office for the players. He knows that the last games he played at City, they've won. They were better. They had their momentum, but they had the control of the game. And that makes them, you know, an extra confidence heading to the game. He said many times at the press conference, we have to shorten the gap. And we have done that the last two times. So he wants to take the game to that position, to that angle. He said also, we are the underdogs. He knows that City has done an amazing job in the Champions League, that they have quality players, probably individually better players than Chelsea. Guardiola probably is a little bit concerned about Gundogan having a muscle injury again. But also Guardiola was very relaxed. I mean, I think what you can see from both press conferences that they were playing mind games. Mm. I'm sure that they're feeling that it's all about not being stressed, being about having the courage of controlling the game. Both are both want the same thing: control the game, trying to not let the opponent move the ball a little bit, not being deep. So it's gonna be like a chess game, and they want their players to be prepared, not to be so stressed, not to have the responsibility and the weight on their shoulders for City. That is just the first time they're in the final, and they have the obligation, the need to win it. So it's going to be very important how they prepare the game, how and how they create specific areas for the player not to be so stressed out.
Thanks, Martin. Martin mentions the recent history between these two. Last three meetings, you're looking at it right there. Chelsea's won 2 of 3 in the most recent two on May 8th in the league and April 17th in the FA Cup. Craig, how, if at all, does that translate those two victories for Chelsea to the Champions League final on Saturday?
Well, it's just a belief that you can, that on any given day, that you can take this City side on and you can beat them. I mean, it's much better stating the obvious than going into a final where you've just been thrashed in the previous two games. So, from Chelsea's perspective, that gives them confidence. Look, there's never no pressure in a final of this magnitude. But in some sense, Thomas Tuchel's already done his job. Hmm. The job that he came in for was initially to get Chelsea into that top four. And he did that, albeit he scraped in when Leicester lost. But he did it. So in some sense, it's a bit of a free hit for him, if indeed you can have that. And I think that's why maybe Martin was saying he's a little bit more relaxed. From Guardiola's perspective, he can play it down as much as he wants, but he is under pressure. You know, not for his job, but he's under pressure because of the headlines that will come once again if he doesn't pull this trophy off. The trophy that he had so much success at Barcelona, but it's eluded him at Bayern Munich and Manchester City. So the pressure is firmly on Manchester City, primarily because of their coach and also because they've lost the last two games to Chelsea. But, you know, as we said at the top of the show, they are favourites, but it is no foregone conclusion.
Frank, if we look back at those last couple victories for Chelsea over Manchester City, is there a blueprint, is there a plan for Chelsea to win this game on Saturday that we can take from those matches?
Yes, definitely. They can get the confidence out of it. And what they did is they've been very strong at the back. They work hard in the middle of the park, and they got the chances that they had at front. And they've been more killer than they normally are, if we can compare with other games. They will play, I think, more in counter-attack than Manchester City. I think City will control the game. But with the pace of the player at front, that may be the solution for Chelsea to win that game. You can find so many signs, you know, and the fact that they won the last two games is maybe a little bit of a plus for Chelsea, bringing some confidence, as I say, and they can also take the fact that never in the Champions League a team who played for the first time Champions League final won. They all lost. So it happened to all clubs. Will it happen to Manchester City? I don't know. Everybody, we are less than 24 hours before the final. Everybody can find a sign. The good sign for Chelsea, they won the last two games. We say never two without three as well. So all the signs are for Chelsea. But we all know that Manchester City is the favorite because, well, if we take individually, I think they are a better team. So it's an open final. The final, you don't play a final, you win a final. That's it.
Frank says all signs point to Chelsea, but Stevie, if we're going off form here across all competitions, Chelsea have lost 3 of their last 4. Any worry there and how they're playing coming into this match?
Oh, 100%. Listen, if it wasn't for Ayoze Perez missing a fantastic chance for the last kick of the game, it would have been 3 losses and a draw, and they would have been out the top four. So the truth is, if Thomas Tuchel looks at how they're performing, then they're struggling. You know, I love that when he was talking about, well, we just want to make this another day at the office. Well, I'll tell you what, they haven't been having many good days at the office. And so that has to be a concern. As far as beating City twice, number one, they didn't play City's first team. Mm. And number two, all this is going to do is going to put City on their toes. And the other thing about City is every time they've been knocked out under Pep, he's always tried to do something clever. Mm. But at his press conference, he's talking about how we just need to go out and play the way we can. We need to go out and do the things we're good at. I mean, that's telling me that he's going to do nothing other than put his best team on the field and tell them to go and play and do your stuff, keep it simple, and just do what you do. That's bad news for Chelsea.
Craig, this idea of Pep kind of tinkering too much in the Champions League, is it a tired narrative or something that City fans should be worried about come Saturday?
Well, I don't think he's tinkered too much in the Champions League. I think he's tinkered in other competitions. We saw that graphic there. That certainly wasn't his strongest team. There's three, maybe four of those players will probably not start. So, you know, as Stevie said, he hasn't, in some of those games, played what we would perceive his strongest 11 without a natural striker, with a partnership of Stones and Diaz. So, yeah, look, it's a difficult game to call in a sense that, you know, Chelsea have had good and bad days lately. But Frank's right. They'll try and play a counter-attacking game. It'll be interesting to see his selection up front, Thomas Tuchel, whether he goes for three pacey guys or whether he tries to throw in a ball-playing player as well. But no doubt, I don't think we'll see Guardiola try and do anything clever here in terms of what he's done all year. Playing without a striker in the final is not going to be trying to be clever because he's pretty much done it in all the big games, and I expect him to do it again. So they'll play their strongest side. I would expect, barring all the injuries, Foden to play. Obviously, Gundogan's been a bit of a concern, but he has been one of the best players. And if City play really, really well and are not sloppy in the final third and defend the way that they have for pretty much 95% of the season, as Stevie said, it is going to be a difficult game then for Chelsea.
Shaq, I'm fascinated by the dynamic of who is the pressure on, as Craig talks about, you know, the pressure kind of mounting on Manchester City and Pep Guardiola. Is that how you see it?
Yeah.
Chelsea kind of playing with house money here?
Absolutely. Chelsea are playing with house money. As Craig rightly points out, Tuchel delivered what he was brought in to do, albeit limping over the finish line at the end of the season, as the boys rightly pointed out. I mean, it goes even further back than that. Three losses in their last four. Before that, the fifth to last game was against City, where but for Aguero maybe trying that Panenka just before halftime with the penalty, we could be having a totally different discussion about Chelsea and their form coming to this one. But given the money that City have spent, given the reason that they go out and get Pep Guardiola, it's all been about the Champions League, a tournament that's eluded them so far this season. And now all of a sudden, they get to their first final in as good form in this competition as they could hope for. They're 100% in the knockout stages. It has a feeling of this has to be the time. And as much as Frank is saying that no first-time finalist has won it, there is just pressure around City that it has to be now or bust. Mm. And Chelsea playing with house money.
All that said, let's get some predictions. I'll start with you.
I'm going to go Manchester City, 2-0.
Really?
Yeah.
That kind of game. All right. Craig, what do you think will win come Saturday?
I'm going to go Man City, ditto Shaka, 2-0.
Wow. Okay, a couple 2-0s. Stevie?
Pep's going to be feeling the pressure. I don't think so. My goodness, this guy's seen it and done it. City wins comfortably.
Wow.
I'll say 2-0, but it may be more.
Okay. Frank?
I don't want to be involved in that. You know, my heart will go first. So it won't be a prediction. It will be a wish. So I don't want to be involved in that. Leave me alone.
All right, Frank, give us your wish then. Give us your wish, huh?
Well, you know what my wish is, you know? Come on. You know, Chelsea, 1-0, that's enough for me. Thank you, bye-bye. Even in penalties,
oh,
that's
you can't,
right.
Frank, if you tell a wish, it doesn't come true. You should know that.
Oh, yeah, true. Well, they already lost then.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, we will leave it there. Plenty more from the boys available on Extra Time today, which you can always catch over on our ESPN FC YouTube channel. Today's guests / victims, Craig, Stevie, and Shaka.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Juventus have sacked Andrea Pirlo in favor of rehiring Max Allegri, but at least Juve have sent Pirlo on his way with this nice statement. Quote, in the space of a few short months, Pirlo's Juve has raised two trophies, the Italian Super Cup and the Coppa Italia, and he has coached, brought home brilliant victories on the most prestigious of fields, from San Siro to Camp Nou. For all this, for the courage, the dedication, the passion with which he demonstrated every day, our thanks go to the maestro, the coach, and to Andrea. That really comes from the heart. Always comes from the heart when we welcome Gab Marcotti into ESPN FC. All right, Gab, what's with that statement? If Juve liked Andrea Pirlo so much, why didn't they just keep him?
Listen, I want to release my inner Holden Caulfield here and suggest that the world is full of phonies and empty words. They obviously do value Andrea Pirlo as a player and as a legend and as a person, but it's pretty clear if they were so delighted with their, you know, two prestigious trophies, one of them being the Super Cup and whatnot, then they would have kept him, given, rather than replacing him with, you know, somebody who makes 4.5 times as much money. I think evidently to them, they might think Pirlo's a great guy and they might think they're going in the right direction, but they evidently think that Max Allegri right now is a better option.
As far as the Italian press, Italian punditry goes, do they feel like Pirlo's been hard done here, or is the timing right?
I think there's a general sense that, you know, Max Allegri had been out of the game for a couple of years now. He was keen to get back. A lot of Juve fans never wanted Allegri gone in the first place. Some people are raising the obvious question, you know, are you getting back a different Allegri than the one, you know, you kind of felt the need to part ways with 2 years ago? But I think, you know, to be honest, I think they are getting a different Allegri. I have the privilege of knowing his right-hand man quite well, spent some time with him very recently. And Allegri spent the last 2 years kind of looking at, studying European football and looking at the evolution and the way things have gone. And I think, you know, he agrees that, you know, the old way of doing things probably needs to be updated. So I think they'll be getting a different Allegri. Allegri himself never liked to be pigeonholed as a certain type of manager. I think he resented a little bit some of the reasons that were given when he was left and was replaced by Maurizio Sarri. And I think you're going to see an Allegri that, you know, hopefully from a Juve perspective, will have all the good parts of Allegri, but also some new parts and a way of playing that I think is in keeping with the direction that they tried to go on with Pirlo.
Gab, what are the expectations here for Allegri's second tenure? Is it he'll come in and take them straight back to the top? Is that realistic?
You know what? I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility. You know, you look at Juve 1-11, and there is a lot of talent there. You look at Inter, and without Conte, I think they're clearly a weaker side. And also, they'll likely have to sell one of their star players as well. A lot of buzz today about Ashraf Hakimi perhaps moving on, or possibly Lautaro Martinez. You know, you look at Milan, and they're still a little ways away. So, you know, you look at this, and you've got the manager who's been there, done that, bought the T-shirt. And you have a really, really good team, players like Kulusevski and Chiesa, a year older. You still get another year out of Cristiano, who, at least in terms of goals, has had his most productive season since moving to Juve. And, yeah, I mean, I think the objective has to be go out and compete for the title. And, by the way, I mean, as disastrous as Juventus's season felt this year, with them only qualifying for the Champions League on the last day of the season because Napoli couldn't go beyond a draw, it's also true that, you know, they're not that far from second place if you look at the table. And then it becomes a question of how much is Conte worth, how many extra points is Conte worth to Inter? And, you know, I think they would feel that they're in the hunt, yeah.
All right, thanks, Gab. Plenty more on Juventus and their busy summer coming up over on our ESPN FC YouTube channel. Join the 920,000-plus subscribers today. Sunday, U.S. men's national team facing off against Switzerland in Switzerland. Coverage starts 2:15 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. It's the final warm-up match before the U.S. heads to the CONCACAF Nations League Final Four in Denver next week. Let's take a look at the list of players Greg Berhalter has available to him for this one. No, of course, Christian Pulisic or Zach Steffen. They're busy. Champions League final. Not a lot of the old guard either in this group. No Michael Bradley, no Josie Altidore. Speaking of the old guard, let's welcome in my good friend Hercules Gomez here on ESPN FC. All right, let's focus in on this friendly. Yes, it's another friendly, but it's another friendly ahead of a very busy summer for the United States. So what do you want to see, Herc, from the U.S. men against the Swiss?
Oh, first of all, it's a friendly by design. You're going to see these three-game windows come World Cup qualifiers. So this is exactly like a three-game window. You have this Switzerland friendly, and then you go off and play what is a semifinal and potential final. So mimicking that, same type of weather and elevation as you'll have in Denver and Switzerland. It's pretty similar. So going off into that, they're already planning ahead, which I love. Now, by design, also by design, I want to see DNA. I want to see if what you're going to do is proactive, is possession-based, it's in the final third, it's through the wings. That's what I want to see. And if Switzerland makes it physical, because Switzerland is somewhat of a physical team, 13th, ranked 13th in the world, so it's going to be a very good opponent for the U.S. men's national team. How can you respond? Because when Jamaica made it physical in those European friendlies last window, they sort of struggled. They had those problems with Northern Ireland as well, especially in transition. So when things go south, how do you adjust? Because Seb, as we know, in CONCACAF, things can go south very, very quickly.
Herc, interesting you mentioned the Swiss global ranking there. Good competition for the United States, which has been really tough to get during this pandemic. We've seen them face a lot of CONCACAF teams, sometimes CONCACAF B teams, so at least good competition there for Greg Berhalter and company. Speaking of competition, any position battles we should be watching in this match?
Yeah, there's a few. I'm going to start with the center backs because I think it's really important. I had Aaron Long penciled in as John Brooks' partner in crime on that back line. Well, he's out with a season-ending injury, Achilles tear. So who can slot in next to him? Chris Richards, he's out as well. He's got a little bit of an injury bug. So it could be Mark McKenzie or Matt Miazga. Who's going to stake claim to that position? Who's really John Brooks' and John Brooks' is alone. So who's going to be next to him? That's going to be a good positional battle to watch out for. And then that number nine battle, we spoke about this, you and I, yesterday on Football Americas. You mentioned Josh Sargent, can he stake claim? But Jordan Cibicu's right there knocking on the door. And Jordan Cibicu's here because Daryl Dike is not. Daryl Dike had himself a hell of a year at Barnsley. Started out on fire, closed off a little cold, didn't make promotion like they had hoped, but he's a player who's going to be heavily involved for this U.S. men's national team. So this is Jordan Cibicu's chance. He's going to be with the A team, so to speak. So can he stay claim to that position? Can he make a name for himself? Because come Gold Cup, you're going to be seeing a lot of Daryl Dike.
Herc, speaking of American number nines, as first reported by our Jeff Carlisle, Josie Altidore has reportedly been frozen out of first team training in Toronto after a disagreement with the new coach, Chris Armas. What do you make of the reports in this story that we're hearing about Josie? Because it's not the first rumblings we've heard about Josie's not being happy in Toronto.
Correct. Not the first rumblings, but this is probably the tip of the iceberg. The situation was apparently a Jeff Carlisle story, who is a very credible writer for us here at ESPN. The Josie was upset that he was taken off during the game against Orlando when they're a goal down. He was taken off for Ayo Akinole, which is a like for like. 20 minutes to go, you take off a nine for a nine. Instead of playing with two nines and you're the DP for this team and the coaching staff doesn't see you as a viable option to get a goal or to help get a goal. So understandably, he's upset. I don't know what was said. Apparently, things were said. The coaching staff did not take kindly to the words being thrown at him, and he's frozen out. They've asked him to find training elsewhere. I don't even know if it's first team or academy training with Toronto or if it's completely frozen out and you're not part of the club anymore. This is an odd situation to me, and honestly, Toronto is a dumpster fire. They have one win in Major League Soccer play, and ironically, that win comes off of goals of Michael Bradley and guess who? Josie Altidore.
Let's talk about Josie's future. I'm looking at the numbers here. He's on $3.6 million this year for Toronto. Do you think he's played his last game for TFC? And if so, where could he end up? Because that's a really big number in terms of MLS salaries.
Yeah, that's a huge number, massive kind of kicker there of where he could potentially go, because you're looking to fulfill some of that salary and maybe give away some of that salary, and Toronto FC being on the hook for a large portion of that. Look, this is a disaster for Toronto FC. This should have been ended a long time ago. I know for a fact that Liga MX teams have been very keen on Jozy Altidor. For whatever reason, there have been a few approaches by Liga MX teams, one being Tigres over the last year, and it just didn't get done. Toronto in the last year and a half renewed him, then all of a sudden looked to offload him. But when it comes time to actually pull the trigger and make a move, they don't do it. This isn't your Tim Pisachenko. This isn't the same Toronto FC team with Sebastian Giovinco, Michael Bradley, Jozy Altidor leading the head with Greg Vanney, that great Toronto team. This has turned into a dumpster fire. They want Jozy out. Jozy Altidor, I'm sure, wants out himself. He's got to leave. The question is, because of that salary, where can he potentially go? And Toronto, how much of it are they willing to eat?
Since you mentioned Liga MX, of course, the first leg of the final between Santos and Cruz Azul last night in Torreón. Cruz Azul, of course, we know famously has not won a title despite being a massive club, massive spending since 1997. They go away. They get a 1-0 win in the first leg. Now they got to go back to Mexico City for the second leg on Sunday. Herc, I think I've asked you this on this very show before. Is this finally the time that Cruz Azul gets it done?
I wouldn't bet for it. I'd actually bet against it. It's plus 1,800 for a Cruz Azuliada. Those of you who do not know, a Cruz Azuliada is like the ultimate jinx for Cruz Azul when things are going well and they just let it slip through their hands. You know, multi-goal leads, only to see goalkeepers score on them in the final minutes to send it to penalties and then lose it in the most dramatic of fashions. I do not discount. I do not take away that there could be a Cruz Azulada in this game. Cruz Azul has that in their history. You mentioned going on 24 years without a league title. Before that, they ended a 17-year drought. Sebi, this is one of the biggest clubs in all of Mexico. This is like the Cowboys and everything that comes with the Cowboys, the bad ownership, the mythical figures that they have, the successful decade for the Cowboys that was the 90s. They can't put it together. It's just one after the other. It's been a train wreck. I honestly can't sit here and tell you this is the year. They are up 1-0 on aggregates, and Santos has only won one away game all year. It seems like this is the moment. But then again, the last six or seven Cruz Azuliadas seemed like they were the moments as well.
All right. I'll remind folks that, of course, Herc had plenty of success in Torreón when he himself was a player for Santos. All right, Herc, we'll leave it there. We'll remind folks they can catch more of us on the latest editions of Football Americas. We cover all things Liga MX, MLS, U.S. men's national team, U.S. women, Mexican national team as well. Find it over on ESPN Plus on demand all week, live Mondays and Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern time.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Turn our attention now to some transfer news. This is from Friday. Liverpool have officially signed centre-back Ibrahima Konate from Leipzig. £36 million, the reported fee, right around $50 million for the 22-year-old central defender. Gab Marcotti still with us. Gab, what kind of player are Liverpool getting here?
I think they're getting a very gifted, athletic central defender, a guy who maybe was a bit overshadowed. You know, if you look at the number of games he's played, obviously he's had serious injuries. He has a lot of competition in that center back spot, obviously from Dia Upamecano, who's gone off to Bayern Munich, Willy Orban, the club captain, Halstenberg and Klosterman also playing back there as well, both German internationals. So, you know, he's really had to kind of elbow his way in, but really by the end of this last season, possibly alongside Upamecano, I think he was arguably Leipzig's best defender when fit. And I think, you know, it's clear they're thinking in terms of succession plan, obviously not straight away, but Virgil van Dijk's coming back from injury. They don't want to rush him back. They want to get as many years out of him as they can. Joe Gomez obviously also coming back from injury. And so I think they feel that they need, you know, three elite starter quality central defenders. Obviously, Joel Matip, I guess, in the mix as well, as well as the guys who, of course, took them to third place in these last games of the season in Phillips and Reece Williams. But I think depth is something you have to value. And they had to pay the fee because it was a release clause. And I think they hope that, you know, long term, he can lead the center of that back four.
Yeah, elsewhere on Friday, we had Barcelona's new again, old again, President Laporta at his press conference. In it, he said he was, quote, moderately optimistic that Messi will stay. Translate that for us. Messi staying at Barcelona?
I think a lot of things point to yes. What would concern me, and look, obviously Laporta's going to say that. What would concern me is, you know, what is the timeline to get this squared away? Because obviously the Copa America is scheduled to start on June 11th, whether it can actually start or not, given, you know, Colombia pulling out and what's going on in Argentina, that's TBD. But you want to get it wrapped as quickly as you can. You don't want to get it done necessarily, I think, during the competition. You want time to plan. I think it's going to influence whether Koeman stays. It's going to influence, obviously, your budget for next season, because if Messi goes, then, you know, you're going to have a lot more wiggle room in terms of salaries. If he stays, I presume he's taking a pay cut. But even then, you know, you want to make sure the ink is dry on that one. So I can only imagine if he says that, it's because an announcement is going to be imminent. I think it would be, frankly, pretty cruel and unusual if Messi were to go and unstring them along.
Right now on our website, Gab, you've written an article. The title is Harry Kane Unlikely to Leave Tottenham. Explain why for those of us who won't or in some cases can't read.
Well, look, the simple fact of the matter is that Harry Kane signed a 6-year deal in 2018, which, you know, is the kind of deal that, yeah, you're great, I'm set up for life, but it really, ultimately, knowing what we know now, there's two things you can conclude from that. One is he's underpaid. He makes less than basically every other top center forward in Europe, from Lewandowski to Benzema, fine, but also he makes less than Haaland. He makes less than than Romelu Lukaku, for example. But beyond that, it means he really has no leverage. He's got 3 years left on his contract. Apparently, the best he could eke out of it is what they call, and I love the euphemism here, you know, a promise that they would look favorably on a request to move. Yeah, that doesn't really give you any leverage at all. Throw in two other big factors here. Very few clubs, if Spurs really are going to hold out for $100 million, $150 million fee, $130 million fee, whatever it is, there's only 3 or 4 clubs in Europe that can afford that. And if you can push the boat out to that kind of money, to $130 million, let's say, for a Harry Kane, well, then you can probably sign a Kylian Mbappe or an Erling Haaland as well. And, you know, I don't want to get into whether their Kane is better or worse than they are, but what I do know for a fact is he's 6 years older than, or he will be 6 years older than Mbappe when he turns 28 this summer, and 7 years older than Erling Haaland, who turns 21 over the summer. So if I'm a club and for that kind of money, I can get Haaland. And by the way, I think you can get Haaland for, if you push it out to 130, 150 million, simply because of the release clause, which means that a year from now, he's going to be in the market for 70, 80 million. Then obviously you're going to go for Haaland and not Kane. Similar argument with Kylian Mbappe. He's got a year left on his contract. He hasn't extended that deal. A year from now, he walks for nothing. Now, I think Mbappe is going to extend, but you don't know that. So ultimately, it leaves Kane with very, very little leverage in terms of forcing a deal. Yeah, he can tantrum, put out a statement saying he wants to leave. He can threaten to go on strike. But, you know, that's the kind of behavior we expect from certain strikers, but not from Harry Kane. It goes completely against his image. It goes completely against his character. So it seems to me like he's kind of painted himself into a little bit of a corner here. And I don't, as of right now, I don't see him budging unless something happens.
Gab, as always, great stuff. If you ever miss an episode of the show on TV, just download the audio version. Podcast available 7 days a week over on the website.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Galacticos, available now on ESPN Plus in English and Spanish. The behind-the-scenes story of Real Madrid during the launch of its megastar era. Let's welcome back Martin Einstein. Of course, he was part of the production crew for this series. Martin, what was the process like and what can our viewers expect from this series?
It was a big challenge because it's telling a story where football transformed into something else. Back then, always and everything was about the game. And Florentino came in that year, 2000, and changed it all in terms of marketing, in terms of money coming to the football, in terms of the players. They were not only people that play football, have to train and do their stuff, but also they were responsible to bring money and sponsors to the club. So it was, today we're talking about this and we say, yeah, I know what you're talking about. But back then was something revolutionary, bringing Ronaldo, Zidane, Beckham, and Figo together, touring around the world, going to Asia, and becoming like the Beatles, like celebrities. Football was not about that back then. Was about the game, was about winning championships, and somehow Galacticos is the perfect example of when football became an industry, when football was something else, and how players deal with that. It was a big tension and a big clash between that football that they used to know and what football was about to become, you know, something really different and something that will change forever the sports.
Martin, speaking of Real Madrid, we know that they're going to need a new manager. You mentioned Zinedine Zidane on his way out. We've heard names. Antonio Conte, the latest to be thrown into the mix. Who do you think will end up replacing Zidane at Real Madrid?
Well, I think that the right question right now is who can Real Madrid afford right now? Because it's not who they want. They probably want Allegri, they probably want Conte, but the treasurer doesn't have any money. I mean, Real Madrid is in a big financial crisis right now. They're trying to get loans, to get money, to sign players, but they can afford to have a manager that makes 10 or 15 million a year. So they will have to try to have different options. Raúl González is one of them. Xabi Alonso is one of them. We're talking about Conte. We will see what Conte, he wants to negotiate. If he wants to make less money than he was doing at Inter, I don't think so. And then there's another challenge for Real Madrid. Conte left Inter because they didn't. The project changed. They didn't. They promised some signings that they weren't going to bring to the club. So if Conte comes to Real Madrid, how the club will make a renovation plan, bring new players, young players, talented, big signings when they don't have money? So it's not only paying the new coach, but also having money to build a new team, which is something very difficult at Real Madrid right now. So I think that there are many, many issues around the new coach. Not only the name of the coach, but also what tools will he have to bring or to create a new squad.
All right, Martin, we will leave it there for now. Congratulations on Galacticos and enjoy the Champions League final tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Chaka, that Galacticos series.
It looks
must watch, TV.
Absolutely.
Must watch.
I mean, this, we are talking about one of the iconic teams in world football, in its history, one of the iconic brands in what the game was to become. And you have to see how it come about. It paints the picture of today's football and the foundations of it so fantastically.
Yeah, cannot wait. Available in both English and Spanish on ESPN+. We stick to English for today's edition of Extra Time. Shaka, Craig, and Frank join me. That starts now. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this Friday edition of Extra Time, a fully loaded edition of Extra Time. Not just Shaka and myself in studio. We got Frank, Stevie, and Craig also with us on the bird. We got a lot of questions, but Craig, I feel compelled to start with you. One of the videos you posted on Twitter, like, was it yesterday, a couple days ago, has gone viral. You versus a bear? What's going on here?
Well, it wasn't me versus a bear. It was actually from last night.
Maybe that was wishful thinking on my.
It was actually from last night at the golf course. I went up to join a few lads in the lovely weather late on. And this little fellow popped out from just behind what? The 10th. Just behind the 10th tee box, and one of my mates was teeing off as he poked his head out of the bushes and walked across the 10th fairway. He was a big lad, I have to tell you.
Is this you shooting it on the phone? Because you seem to be getting closer and closer to the bear.
It is me shooting it. I went and got the phone out of my bag, and the lads were holding me back, but, you know, I fancied my chances even if he attacked me, so I was trying to get as close as possible.
I don't. I wouldn't fancy your chances. I wouldn't fancy your chances running away, Craig. I've seen you run.
I have to say, if that thing had turned and growled at me, Shaka.
Frank, you got any bears there in Paris?
I'm sorry, do I like bears? I love bears. Yeah. And I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed with what Craig did. I mean, I would have done like Shaka. I would have run away, you know? I mean, that guy is crazy. Well, you know, he thought he was Mel Gibson, you know, in the movie. He was there, freedom! And he was going into the bear. I'm a crazy guy.
Stevie, listen. Seb. Stevie will tell you that was a rather big bear, but Stevie and I a few years ago encountered a kind of mid-sized bear on a different golf course, and he was a bit of a smart ass trying to wind me up.
Who, Stevie or the bear?
No, him.
Stevie, you didn't get the invite to the golf? What happened?
Oh, at night, I've got too many things going on later on.
We got one thing going on.
All right, I'm being told to move on to questions here. Hold on.
All right. I thought he was going to tell you what he did to me. He snuck up behind me when I was putting the clubs in the bag.
Not a bit.
And tried to pretend he was. Not... Go on.
Well, what happened was he went back. He said he was going to go and get his phone. So he started walking towards the buggy. So he turned his back to bend into the buggy. And as he turned his back, I thought, I'll just start running. Because he'd kind of lost his bearings. I thought, if I start running, I'll see if he runs anyway. I started running and I shouted, Craig! And he just lifted his head and he started running away. He started running the opposite direction and I stopped and I just stood there laughing at him. He's like that.
Perfect way to pull a hamstring. Do your back, something there. Craig, do you think if Chelsea loses the final, can we call this season a success or a failure for them, considering you were having a go at Manchester United despite finishing second in the league?
What's Chelsea and Man United got to do with each other? Chelsea have won the Premier League in the last few years. Chelsea have won... They've won cups, they've won the Europa League, they're in a Champions League final. There's no bearing here on Man United. For God's sake, how boring is this? Look, at the end of the day, are we talking about Chelsea here or are we talking about the manager? The manager came in to replace Lampard, who was sacked, and has delivered what his remit when he came in was not to win the FA Cup or indeed win the Champions League. That was all pie in the sky when he got the job. The remit was to get this team running again and to get them into the top four. As Shaka said, they limped over the line on the show. So ultimately, he's, you know, whatever happens at the weekend, he's pretty much done his job. Anything else is a huge bonus for him, trust me.
Stevie, why would any top signing, Kane or Sancho, the two examples given, want to play for United, speaking of Manchester United, a fledgling club, or Ole, a mediocre losing manager? I love how the tweets get more and more passive-aggressive towards the end.
A fledgling club, Manchester United.
Let's just leave the end. Forget the end of that.
That's Jerome's words. That's not ours.
Stevie?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. There's the money, there's the history. The fact that in the years to come, they will always have money available. And really, is Ole going to be there for long? I don't think so. You know, if I'm Harry Kane, who do I think the next manager of Manchester United is going to be? Mm. It's not going to be another Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It's going to be one of the top names that are available. And so, if you're looking at going to a side who are not quite there, or certainly not at the top, but who more than anybody else, because of the financial clout in particular, it's Manchester United. Mm.
Frank, you think there are players that look at Manchester United and say, nah, I'd rather not?
Some of them will do. We'll do that. I say, no, I don't want to go. I don't know who the manager was going to be. The team is not strong enough. The history, the short-term history of the club is not big enough for me to hope something and get something, get a silverware at the end of the season. But if there is a project, a real project, where a man like Kane knows that three or four other players are going to come, yeah, might be a possibility. But if you are the first in the list, and you say, okay, but who else? And somebody is going to tell you, well, maybe him, maybe him. No, I don't think big-time player will come. I don't think so.
But listen, Sebi, it's already happened recently. Erling Haaland did it. Mm.
Yeah.
Now, you can say Erling Haaland went to Dortmund for progression, for game time and all this. But, I mean, they're still a big club. But he was coveted by Man United. I mean, a fellow countryman in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, allegedly, went all out to try and get him. And he said, at this particular point, or at that point, he said no. He turned them down.
When your club bought a player that played your position, were you worried about potentially losing playing time or motivated for the competition or a little bit of both? Shaka?
I'm tempted to say a little bit of both, but the truth is, that's part of playing football at the highest level.
But you don't like it. It doesn't sit well with you. It never makes you feel good, does it?
No. It's not a vote of confidence, if you want to put it like that. But, you know, it's part of what you do every single day. Players come and players go, regardless of what level you play at. You know, that's just part of the territory. And you learn not to, you don't let it bother you too much, you know, one way or the other. You just deal with it.
Did how much your club spent on the other guy factor into how much you worry about it? How much it bothers you?
I guess so. I guess it would, yes.
Juan asks, did any of you have a manager whose outlook was basically right? Here's the 11, here's the bench, you're better than them, go win. No real game plan with contingencies. You know, like Ole. I swear this is not me making this up at the end of these tweets. This is really how they're coming in.
I'm blaming you, Sebi.
Stevie, you ever had a manager like that?
I think you've made that. Listen, Liverpool, certainly in my time and having talked to former players in their time, Liverpool very rarely changed their game to suit the opposition. I can't think of any time Kenny did it. I don't remember Joe Fagan doing it. Bob Paisley definitely did it once before I got there. The early, I think it was in 80 when he made Sammy Lee do a man marking job against Bayern Munich, I think it was. But I think they had a few injuries, so I think that was the only reason for it. But other than that, all the Liverpool sides that won throughout the years all basically were put on the field with the message of they're going to have to beat us because we're better than them. If we do what we're good at, then we'll beat them. So that's how the Liverpool sides through the 70s and 80s went about it. They never changed for anybody. You had to beat us. We weren't changing for you.
Craig, any of your former managers guilty of something similar?
What part? I can't read the question.
Kind of no game plan, but effectively oversimplifying things, right? Just being like, here's the 11,
no,
you're
I
better
think
than
it,
go out
well,
and win.
Well, I know what Stevie's talking about because some of those Liverpool teams were magnificent. But they still had a
culture.
Game plan.
I should have said culture. That's the word I should have said.
Yeah, they still have a game plan. I mean, they might be the best side in the league or the best side in Europe as Liverpool were for a period, but they still have a game plan. They still have a structure to the way they play. And when we talk about contingency, you know, contingencies are generally not made before the game. Yeah, you have your substitutes, but the best coaches are reactive. The ones that can see what's going on and know when to make the right changes and get that right. That's a big part of it. You know, you can sit and plot away all week what you're going to do. But that all goes out the window when the 90 minutes starts and people get injured or people make mistakes or somebody's not playing well or an opposition team does something different. That's when a manager turns to his coaches and they or whatever and they figure it out. And that's why some of them are better than others.
Southampton players
and
have
by the
option.
Way, hey, oh. Seb.
Yeah, Stevie?
Hey, Seb. If you're coaching a team and during the week leading up to the game, you play two different ways and you say, well, you know what, we're going to play this way and if it doesn't work, then we're going to do this. If you're a player, you're going, hold on a second. If it doesn't work, why are you asking us to do something if you don't even think it works? You know what I mean? You've got to instill confidence in the things that you're doing as a coach and you're telling your players, this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing it. You can't halfway through it go, oh, and by the way, if it doesn't work, we're going to do this. It's like, the players will be going, what? What's this guy on about?
Speaking of players, Southampton players have the option to receive bonuses in Bitcoin. Would any of you guys be willing to accept Bitcoin as payment for your employment contract? Frank, you a big Bitcoin guy? You big in crypto? Lots of holdings, highly volatile?
It would have interested me like, when Bitcoin just started, when it was nothing, and now we'll be a billionaire, you know? But now, I'm not sure. I have to ask Elon Musk what he think about, because he would be able to put it down or to put it up. No, I want real money. Give me some pounds, some dollars, or some euros I will be happy with.
There you go. Shaka?
No.
No? Not touching it.
I just don't understand it.
Can I be honest? I have zero clue about what it is. I definitely have, you know, a few shekels thrown in. I have this little account on my phone. Yeah, and you open it and
it's not anything. That's the thing.
Yeah, you don't know what you're...
It's not anything.
But the value goes up and down, and it's, you know, it's kind of fun to track.
I get
some
that.
Some days are really good, and then other days are bad.
I get that. But I just don't understand it as a technology or its applications in the real world.
Hard
other than having
money.
It and seeing it go up and down.
Oof, been a bad day for your boy.
Yeah, you see?
Minus 900 on the day then for me. Not great. Craig, who should Manchester United replace Ole with? Conte, Antonio Conte, Zinedine Zidane, or Joachim Löw?
Well, you can rule the last one out. I don't think they'll go for somebody like Antonio Conte because he's yeah, he's had success at, you know, several clubs, Juventus, Chelsea, Inter Milan, but he's fiery. He is demanding. He's open in his press conferences. I mean, I don't mind it sometimes, but I think if you're an owner, I think the ownership at United, like, it seems to me they like people that are more in line with what they want to get put out, that message, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And I think Antonio Conte is somebody that would put a rocket up their backside, and I don't think they would go for somebody like that. Maybe Frank will know better than me, I don't know. Maybe they would go for somebody like Zidane, who's sort of quieter about the way he goes his business. The players would kind of like him, apart from if Gareth Bale was there, obviously. So I don't know. I would probably say out of the two, they would likely go for Zidane for those reasons, but I would say Conte maybe would be the better coach.
Frank, what do you think? Zidane and Manchester United.
Well, I think Zidane could do something good. I mean, he worked for the reserve team before and the academy, so he knows how to deal with young players. But for like 7 years, he's been working, you know, on and off with very talented, confirmed players, and he worked with them. He doesn't speak English. I'm not sure he wants to come to England. It can be a good solution, but I think for me, if you ask me between the three that I can see, Joachim Le will be maybe a good choice. He's going to be free. I mean, I guess he's willing to come to England, and he has the expertise to help Manchester United. I don't think the two others would like to come to Manchester United with the status of the club right now.
Stevie, do you expect Konate to start over Gomez next season, or will he be eased into a starting role?
I think right now it depends on Gomez's injury. If Gomez is fit and healthy for the start of pre-season, then I would suggest that it's going to be about who does better in the pre-season. You know, right now, if I'm putting my money on anything, I'm telling you that Konate starts ahead of Gomez. But the only way Gomez will get ahead of Konate is that he's ready to go from the first day of pre-season and does well.
Should there be a different method to resolve ties in championship matches, Shaka? It seems strange to have goalkeepers taking penalties to decide major tournaments.
Well, I mean, that really is a one-off. That is an exception.
And it was spectacular and amazing.
It was. And they flirted with a number of different ways to resolve it. None of them, I think, work. Remember those shootouts?
The MLS shootouts?
Yeah.
35 yards with like a 5-second clock.
Back in the 80s or wherever it was. Yeah. That was fun. But, I mean, people have floated the idea of who has more corner kicks. But I think that's a disaster as well.
What about this? Take a player off until somebody scores.
From the time you said, what about this, and put your two fingers up in the air like that,
That's just stupid.
I knew. From the time he went like that, I knew it was going to be something.
Right, here comes the Sevilla.
I knew.
Stevie, you didn't like that
one? Don't touch the rules.
That's cool. That's just
leave
a stupid thing.
Leave football alone.
Sure. I don't know how we complain about goalies taking penalties. Have you ever seen the rugby? And the Rugby Union Cup final, when they go through the players and you end up with a hooker who's like 18 stone, 5'6", can't even swing his leg, has got to take a conversion. Now, that is stupid.
So there's nothing wrong with goalies taking penalty kicks, in my opinion.
By the way,
yes,
hey,
Craig.
What's wrong with the goalkeepers taking a penalty kick when the Villarreal goalkeeper took one of the best penalties out of the world?
Oh yeah, that was.
Yep.
That was a great penalty.
I mean, let's be honest. There were 21 great penalties, weren't there?
Yeah. Not 21. Rooney could have saved another one.
18.
Luke Shaw's wasn't great.
Bruno Fernandes wasn't great.
Yeah.
Bruno Fernandes wasn't great. Shaw wasn't great.
Yeah.
So we wrote 17, 18. We'll go with that.
Yeah. All right, final question here. Who will win a a Marble Mania tournament between the ESPN FC crew. What is Marble Mania?
Frank. Well, Frank is a Marble Mania expert.
Frank will win it because he's the only one that would play.
The only one.
None of us would play.
What is Marble Mania?
France
bought the...
Go ahead.
Oh, he's froze. He's froze.
What's going on? I'm here.
You're there.
Yes, Marble Mania is a Dutch show, and French TV bought the rights. And it's very fun because you have a kind of a race where you have to push your marble, and you have games, and you have to be precise because if you go out, you have to start from start. So it's nice. It's very entertaining. And I went to Amsterdam to play for TV, so everybody's teasing me on the social networks. It's really fun. They want to know the result. I wasn't paid. It was for a charity. When you go for charity, you're not paid. That's for charity. And the thing is, I can't say the result because it's going to be on TV in July, I think. So I have to keep the secret.
Oh, no, you
just
kidding.
So you know, I did well.
He did well without giving away too much. Frank is there. Anybody else?
It was fun. Yeah, right.
Anybody else from the ESPN FC world you think would be good for the Marble Mania tournament?
Shaka Hislop. He's a goalkeeper. He knows how to move his fingers.
He knows how to move his fingers.
Yeah, he kind of catch a ball, but he knows how to move his fingers.
Easy, Stevie.
You see how angry Stevie got there when he said it was for charity?
Yeah.
What, for charity?
You could do a weekend in Amsterdam, couldn't you?
I calmed down when he said that.
I might nice make it to the Marble Mania, but... Yeah.
Right, exactly. All right, well, that's it for us. Don't forget...
Hey, Frank, was it a bar there?
Yeah.
The what? The bar.
Was there a bar at Marble Mania?
What?
Le bar.
Was there a bar?
Frank, you've got the worst internet in the whole of Paris.
Amsterdam. It was a curfew. It was completely closed. No, we went straight to the studio. It wasn't fun.
No. Absolute professionalism from Frank LeBeau. Plenty more of that professionalism on tomorrow's show. Yeah. The crew will be here to break down everything from the Champions League final and beyond. Don't miss it.